Good Friday afternoon, and thank you for tuning in wherever you are tuned in from. It's a Friday. The weather is getting chiller and chiller by the day. I think that's an English word. I mean, there's such a thing as chiller in the English language. Now, from the look of things, or the feel of things, rather, if winter is upon us. Winter is getting... It's getting cold by the day.
Slowly but surely, yes.
Yeah, slowly but surely.
Until it reaches like 8:30 and then the sunlight decides to... Yeah, we're ramping this up, hey guys. Look at us, you know. Feel it. You can feel it in your bones. But then at 7:30, you were freezing.
Yeah. Now, well, speaking of winter, winter is coming and... I don't think if you are in Windhoek and Oshakati, you should worry much about winter because the divorce statistics indicated that the things are worse in terms of marriage dissolution in these two towns. So don't have to worry about being single. So now that we have that out of the way, let's talk about SADC, the IMF, and the World Bank that have gathered in Washington for their spring. For their spring meeting, and SADC representatives have, you know, SADC representatives are there, and that event it's started on the 13th, and it's running until tomorrow.
Yep,
the 13th to the 18th, and they are, I mean, World Bank and IMF. These are your, you know, these are they are like let's say, but for countries. And
oh no, Fra Helmut. Why would you go there?
Let's be honest, Diego.
Let's talk about countries.
Yeah?
True. That is true.
Look, that's the...
You could have gone like a short-term cash loan for countries.
Short-term cash loan? Countries are drowning in debts because of this guy.
Yeah, it became long-term, you know. It became long-term, but that's unfortunately what's happening, yeah.
Well, long-term, that's because, well, every time that you... look, if you came up with a business idea, and your idea was like, you know what, let me just give this a trial run and see if it works. If it starts working, why would you stop it?
True.
Yeah. So one of those things that have basically become central to that discussion is a financial, you know, basically the financial sphere of things. And that is a discussion you want to listen to. Forget what's going on in the political sphere 90% of the time, but when financial minds basically come together to talk about these are the guys that are determining which direction everything goes. Because everything at the end of the day will require funding. Everything that will be discussed at the United Nations General Assembly, or you know the annual UN General Assembly discussions, annual EU discussions, annual. Although the EU guys, the EU guys know how to fund their own projects. It's just the AU that's the problem when it comes to funding their own projects.
But here's the downside, also, Hamoud.
Yeah, oh boy.
The EU guys are literally, you know, and this is where the what do they call it? The tiered system comes in for clients. They are always the first in line to get like their cash loan immediately. For us, that's now Africa. Uh-huh. You are like, please bring me your employers. Please bring me your letter of employment, your letter of residence, proof of 3 months salary, your proof of a bank account, meaning proof of a bank account, meaning the letter from your bank manager. Saying that you do have a bank account at that branch. 3 pay slips, even though you're bringing the proof of employment letter along. 3 pay slips or 3 months worth of pay slips. And then you still have to bring your bank statement. You know, that which was champed, which was, no, listen to me saying champed, which was stamped by the inquiries desk inside the branch.
Now, the first one makes, the first one makes sense in my language.
What do you mean, makes sense?
Like jumped.
Or champ.
Like,
no, I was going to say CH.
Jump of the tamba, which literally translates to like jumping, as in jumping.
Yeah.
Yeah. makes sense in Thimbukushu, but in English, no, it doesn't. It doesn't. And that's one thing I find, I find interesting about language. Anyone that speaks, anyone whose native language is any of the Bantu languages will tell you that when they went to school, they were asked to tell a story. They emphasized the degree of intensity of an activity by repeating the word. Take, for example, run.
Mm.
Yeah, we emphasize the degree of, more like the distance, the degree with which something was done, the intensity by repeating the word run. You know, it's very normal. If, you know, it makes sense in a lot, if not all, Bantu languages to just repeat the word "run." They ran, they ran, they ran, they ran, they ran. It makes sense in the Bantu languages.
Mm.
When you translate it in English, it sounds ridiculous. We ran for about 15 kilometers. Now we don't have the equivalent of that. We just say they ran, they ran, they ran, they ran, they ran. Rani.
You know, it was the most interesting thing my mom told me of working with colleagues.
Yeah.
She asked the colleague in English, where are you off to? Because my mom wanted to go with, it was lunch.
Yeah.
And the colleague responded by saying, no, I'm footing. My mom was like, huh?
Yeah.
You're what? No, I'm footing. And my mom was like, are you trying to say walking? I'm going to walk there.
We are going on foot.
Even though the word footing exists in English.
Yeah.
To foot the bill, he's footing the bill, he's going to... He's going to be responsible for paying the bill. He is covering the bill or the costs. But, okay, that's the downside of English. English has got so much terminologies, phrases, and expressions. When you actually think about it, it's ridiculous. Because even the word awesome, ne?
Mm-hmm.
The word awesome, the word terrific, the word... the word awesome...
Oh, the most confusing one is apparently...
Yeah, because yeah. Apparently is used interchangeably with...
Exactly, that's the confusing part.
With allegedly.
Yeah.
And apparently and allegedly today mean almost the same thing.
Yeah.
But if you say it is apparent that I can see the wall, which implies it is obvious I can see the wall.
That's now the you get the confusion. Yeah.
Now you just could put the L-Y at the end of apparently. Now apparently becomes allegedly.
Yep.
This was one of the nice things also where Wanda that used to work here with us, because Wanda also coached, you know, former journalists and many journalists that he and I both knew. There was one sentence he asked me about when I wrote, one of these crime reports for our socials. And he was like, Dwight, why are you saying allegedly if the police are reporting about the crime?
It is alleged. That's used a lot in a lot of media crime reporting.
Media reports, yeah. That come from the. But here's the thing, yeah. When you go and think about it logically,
yeah.
The police are the relevant authority,
yeah.
To give you the nitty gritties, the essentials, the core facts about an event. So they are an authority.
Yeah, they are.
So up until any other authority. You know, debunks what the police say, the police are an authority. So when you look at a crime report, it's supposed to go like, not allegedly, the police reports are indicating towards, or the police have reported that this incident has taken place. Meaning it's a definite. They reported that this is what has taken place. A car has exploded, a person has lost their life, a potential suicide has been reported, stuff like that, ne?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't go and say the police are allegedly reporting that there's an alleged crime, allegedly somewhere.
Oh, please just allege the crime, not the police report. You can't allege the police report.
You will read those things, but you will read it in Namibia. So yeah, it's fun times. And it's fun times specifically also when you look at our discussion for today. Sadek showed up there in Washington. They're still there.
They're still there.
Mr. Mokhosi is still there. Showed up there in Washington, and apparently, I say apparently, it's
as in
allegedly.
Okay,
not apparent as in it's obvious.
Yeah,
I'm using that. So apparently, it's about driving home the particular engagements that have been done. It's about driving home SADC's economic integration plan. And yeah, I mean, for one reason, I don't know why he was also championing the AU's integration, economic integration plans, because AU needs to do AU work. SADC is doing SADC's work. That's why I keep telling you, Hamoud, SADC is on the ball. SADC is on the ball with its stuff. It's AU that's not on the ball. SADC will continuously just go and do its stuff. They will commit to their agreements. I mean, one of the nice things was the meeting that he had with the ambassadors of the various SADC nations that have embassies in the U.S. And the nice thing is what was what he shared was what they shared there between each other was about there needs to be greater synergy between the heads of state summit. There's another committee he mentioned, but it's a committee for the economic integration across the block. And the particular, what these ambassadors in the U.S. who are based in the U.S. from the SADC countries who have embassies in the U.S. Mm-hmm. are trying to achieve there for their countries. Meaning that if you're a SADC nation and you're an ambassador from a SADC nation, you speak about SADC also through your embassy. That's what I could read between the lines. Yeah. So there I am alleging.
So you are representing both your country and the bloc. Region. Yeah, the bloc.
Yeah, even though a whole bunch of countries from the bloc have missions in Washington, D.C., the aim is that if you're talking about your country's needs and your country's interests in the U.S., you also include a SADC aspect. Because he highlighted, here's one of the most important things in what was highlighted by that statement that SADC has got, is that the communication between what is, you know, what the head office, let's say the Minister of International Relations here in Namibia, is trying to champion, and that information between the mission over there and the, let's say, the head office here, that there's some fluid information flow, so that when Minister of International Relations has to communicate something to the SADC level in SADC, you know, when the heads of state goes for the heads of state summit, that we have this constant flow of information regarding what's happening at various discussions. Why? Because the IMF and the World Bank are based in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Which is a bit interesting because the UN is based in New York City, north of Washington, D.C. So, yeah. It's an interesting thing. It's an interesting particular, what do they call that? What's that word? An interesting particular encouragement that he's highlighting there, Mr. Makhosi. If you guys don't know, he's the executive secretary. Yeah, of the SADC of SADC itself, Mr. Elias Makhosi. And so this was some of the interesting things because I wanted to know. First off, when we plan for this discussion, what is SADC going to go say at these meetings? And lo and behold.
It's a very depressing question to ask yourself, but okay, go on.
No reason. I asked that question last week.
Mm-hmm.
Ne? Lo and behold. Okay, I wrote a small industry article for our e-paper, but you know, it didn't appear in the e-paper. But on the way there, he highlighted specifically the aim is to go and champion SADC's economic integration strategy. Now, I like someone who speaks on our interests, Hamoud. This AU interests, besigheid, you know, it just doesn't sit because in between you've got the Sudanese who go and decide, oh, you know what, let's bomb each other. And everybody's like, it's a bra. You know, you've got roads that connect us to Egypt. You've got roads that can connect us to Ethiopia. And then suddenly you decide to go and play Armageddon / what's that Mad Max, that movie by the previous Mad Maxes, not the new Mad Max. The previous ones by Mel Gibson. Decides to go play Mad Max there in the middle of everything because Sudan could have been a lovely nexus, a connecting point between Central and Southern Africa and North Africa and Eastern Africa. What do I mean by that, Helmut? Yes, I do have a dream one day of getting in a car and driving through Africa from tip to tip and then drive back through Africa.
You have so much faith in our ability to resolve conflict disputes.
Peacefully.
Uh-huh. And then building up infrastructure just
at the same time. At the same time.
And remaining peaceful enough not to blow it up before you drive through that.
Or being tolerant, or being patient enough, ne? Being patient enough with each other not to blow up each other's infrastructure.
Uh-huh.
For it to last at least a generation, 25 years, for everyone to benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Helmut. Unfortunately, I do have my dreams and my unicorn-based ambitions, you know. A unicorn obviously implies, guys, it's a dream. Yeah, that was one of the interesting things when the AFCFTA MSME summit took place here in Windhoek in 2024. Because the various AU officials kept using the phrase unicorn, and they kept saying unicorn. You remember we were laughing about the phrase because to them, they wanted to see African companies become achieve 1 billion US dollar valuations. And we were sitting there, what? Yeah, the word unicorn is probably the best, you know, term or label you can apply to this. But it's not even an African term, unicorns.
Yep.
It's not even an African term. Because, I mean, how will you now describe, Helmut, to a business person, let's say in... What's the most remote place I've been to in my life? Joaneng. No, not Joaneng. Kang in Botswana. It's just a service station that stands there. Okay, probably it might now be a supposed, you know, literally a town.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2007, it was just a service station.
Jesus.
It was just a BP service station there, somewhere in the middle, next to the road. There's no town, there's zero, just a service station. So, yeah, if you talk about Kang, yeah, maybe. How am I going to explain to the person at Kang in Botswana that we're trying to raise that service station to unicorn status? And since 2007, when I last saw Kang, up until now, 2026, now, which is 19 years ago, mind you,
yeah,
has that person caught on to just energy transition in between? They probably would know what a solar panel is, but solar panel is also a phrase that doesn't exist in a local African country, a local African languages. So how do you translate solar panel into, let's say, into the Botswanan language?
You know, translating that would be, you know, a little funny, but it would be basically right to translate it literally. Because, you know, the word, solar, you know, it takes you to sol, is either Latin or Greek, which literally means sun.
Mm.
Yeah. So, how would the word solar sound like in your language? Cheers, okay. I already want to laugh at mine.
Look, in Afrikaans, we do have a name for solar panels.
Which is?
We say son panela.
Which translates to?
Sun panels.
Yeah.
Direct translation, sun panels.
Yeah, just translate it directly. Because, sun, solar, those are also, you know, sun and solar, both a direct translation of, you know, of the original word, I think, sol, that's coming out of either Latin or Greek. It's just direct translation.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, this event that started on the 13th, you know, in Washington, this is a financial discussion. Where the IMF seemed, the World Bank and the IMF, basically, you know, your Bretton Woods institutions, and the spring meeting, which started on the 13th of April, and it's running until the 18th. That's tomorrow.
Mm.
Now, the reason why I'm saying this is one of those discussions that you don't want to miss is because, financial institutions run everything. Now, I know that political discourse dominates mainstream media. I totally understand why financial discussions are very difficult to have, because there are a lot of numbers and tables and graphs involved, and a lot of us don't understand that language. But you can't go wrong. If you want to understand which direction the world is headed, look at the money. Follow the money. And with that comes, you know, with that comes a lot of information, which is why if you look at the, you know, at the Sadiq's own Facebook page, which you shared, by the way, thanks, man, because this is, I mean, this is gold. Now, the second,
it's just a Facebook page. You get the exact same info on their website.
The second paragraph, this development, and now this is, they're calling it, spring meetings.
Yeah.
Yeah, these developments are reshaping the creation, transfer, and don't start it from there. Now, for 2026, where global policymakers and financial sector leaders examined the rapid transformation of capital markets driven by emerging technologies and innovation and innovative financial products. One thing that, you know, G7 summit in Italy 2025 or 2024, the CEO of BlackRock said something interesting, you know, with regards to how the financial sector is changing from what it was, during the times of, the exact word he uses, yesteryear.
Yeah.
Yeah, to today. And he points out that, the point he basically makes is that, the financial sector, the global financial sphere is moving, or more like it's changing in a way that, every country developed and developing needs a growth strategy. That's the most painful part, because 90% of, of African countries, well, we don't have plans. Oh, point of correction. We have plans, but we are very lazy, or more like stingy, to finance our own plans. Therefore, we go out there and adopt other people's plans and implement them at home. And then we keep beating our heads, hitting ourselves in the heads, trying to figure out, why is it not working? Well, because for one, the plan is not yours.
Yeah.
Now, it goes on to say that these developments, they're shifting in global financial, architecture. These developments are reshaping the creation, transfer, and management of risk across financial systems, offering opportunities, for enhanced growth and efficiency. Again, we are back at growth strategy.
Mm.
Everyone, every country developing or developed needs a growth strategy. That's in our case now. That's where, you know, that basically globally, that's where your SDGs would be, you know, you would come in. And here at home, that's where your NDPs, we are now in NDP 6. That's when, you know, yeah, that's where they would come in. These developments are reshaping the creation, transfer, and management of risk across financial systems, offering opportunities for enhanced growth and efficiency, while also giving rise to new challenges for financial stability. That brings us to why take, for example, if an EU member state and, you know, an EU member state and an African country went to these financial institutions to borrow money, the EU would most likely have it easy in terms of accessing whatever product that they have available. Why? It's because, like every financial institution, they are looking at how easy it would be for you to pay money, to pay back this money. If someone that has a job and someone that doesn't have a job approach a financial institution here at home, just go to any commercial bank, the two of you, you know, someone that doesn't have a job and someone that has a job, and you realize that it will be much easier for someone that has a job to, you know, to access whatever financial, whatever product this financial institution is offering.
Oh no, they'll send you an SMS.
They're looking at security.
No, the bank will send you an SMS. Hey, Mr. Lynx, you qualify for XYZ. You're like, hey, don't tempt me.
Well, in that is the EU. Now,
You are right. You are right, Ahmed. That is the EU.
Look, it's funny, but it's true.
That is also Far East Asia. Most advanced part of Asia is Far East Asia. And yes, and then obviously, okay, India would be a different scenario. India, Indonesia, Malaysia, and Thailand and the Philippines, those guys, Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Primarily because India brings a whole bunch of industry with its population. I mean, Hamoud, you cannot go wrong with 1 billion people in your country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't even go wrong if you had at least 5 million Namibians in this border set up. You could not go wrong. But if you start looking between 1.5 and 3 million, you're like, eish. Hey, who's? Yay! I mean, just imagine to yourself now, you can go and open up. Let's spitball a little bit here. Let's say you go back home there to Divundune and you go open up a corner shop.
Mm-hmm.
We imagine that there are now paved roads and, you know, with sidewalks and everything. And you just put up a corner shop there and the corner shop sells potato chips.
Yeah.
And Coke, you know. Not the narcotic, you know, actual Coca-Cola, you know. And you sell Coke and portions of chips. How would you be rich? I'll tell you today, you'll be rich.
Mm-hmm.
How much you will be rich? Not a hamburger, not selling coffee or tea. No, just 500 ml Coke or 600 ml Coke, the bottles. Maybe a 2 liter as well. And then portions of chips. That's all you are selling, Helmut.
Mm-hmm.
From 7:30 in the morning to 10 at night, you'll be rolling in money. They're in Divundu. You will have customers who don't even live in Divundu, but they'll come to you.
Divundu is more like a transit hub.
Yeah,
yeah.
So too is Kalkran, so too is Arvidflay, too is Arandas.
The strategic locations gives you a lot of advantage.
Yeah.
Arandas is, I don't know why they had to.
You have to turn off.
That's the problem.
but Usikas and Karibup and Arandas.
Yeah, those ones are just.
Arvidflay on the way to Hobabas. Kalkran on the other side of Rehoboth. Okay, not Okahanya. Okahanya, you actually have to look for the way to get out of Okahanya. Ojavarongo is also just right through it, but it's actually, it's also well laid out. But here's the main selling point that would happen there.
Yeah.
There would be a spot where people know between 7:30 to 10, they can come make money from. Now, the moment your bank sees, yes, Helmut was not employed, but Helmut went and started something. And he's got the land. Even though he might be paying rent, he's got something. He's paying salaries and he's making money specifically from local supply he gets from the local potato farmers around him. And he's actually selling a product that people want, or he's providing something people want. Then the bank will come to you. But with that example that you started off with, Helmut, I'm literally describing India to you.
Yeah.
But that example, is literally India.
Yeah.
Besides for getting to a scenario where, it's now person A, person B being having the salary, person A having to be creative with life, person B then has to go and, sort of like, they're getting the SMSs, the WhatsApps. Please, Mr. Lynx, come to the bank. We've got
you qualify for this and this.
A
this
special
would be
fun day.
Beneficial for you.
We just have a fun day for you to come in and look at. You can come and peruse the menu of bank loans that we can give you from car to housing to your child's education that you probably don't have yet to funeral plans, and because they're now also the banks are now also selling insurance. I'm like,
Yeah, I figured.
They're also selling insurance. If you buy a car through a bank loan, do you know what they do now? They ask you, they call you. Even if you say, no, I don't want to take on another responsibility onto the same transaction.
Yeah, I want to be financially responsible.
Yeah. What they will do is they will take out insurance on you. Remember, you need to have insurance for the loan. So you go get insurance from a from insurance company for buying the car through a car for through a vehicle bond
yeah.
or through a vehicle loan. So in effect, you've got two responsibilities on for one product that you are paying for, the insurance and the car's in the car's installment. And then the bank comes to you and then they come and tell you, listen, Dwight, you also need to now take insurance, pay for insurance on you for having taken out this bond for this car. Now, how that happened was my specific bank, my own particular bank, called. These were South Africans that called me. They were not Namibians. It was the South African division because it was a plus two seven number. It was a South African number that called me and they said, "Well, Mr. Links, you know, you've got to take out. We're asking you to take out insurance on you, and we want you to pay for the insurance on yourself." And I said, "My dear, why would I do that in my life?"
Yeah.
And then they anyway went and did it, Helmut, because they anyway went and continued with a particular exercise. Because I just started seeing a weird deduction. It was like a $20 or $30.
Mm-hmm.
But I started noticing this deduction. So there's also that scenario that takes place. Now, when you try to look at that from a person, a personal household scenario, and you elevate it now in, and you morph it into a picture potentially of a country, there's nothing wrong for a country to be in debt.
Just like there's nothing wrong for a person to be in debt.
There is everything wrong for a person to be in debt.
There is nothing wrong for a person to be in debt.
There is, Hamoud. Look, we don't want to preempt Francina's, is it Francina's show? Or is it, what's her name show? No, not Francina's show tomorrow. Happy show tomorrow. We're not preempting Happy show tomorrow. No? But we are slightly preempting it.
Very much.
Very much.
Yeah.
Because when you think about it in essence, mm-hmm. for a country does need to stimulate industry.
Yeah.
So you will need your government through its development budgeting to stimulate procurement from local content policy, local content participation. So government will always need printing paper, printers, computers, other particular services and products, toilet paper, you know, chemicals to do its stuff, to buy car parts from the local dealerships. Yes, because they need to consume this and they need to use and keep their service provision also up to standard. And they will have to pay and build for infrastructure and roads and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment you get these other people that come, like some of our opposition parties that once back in last year came and said, Why are we in so much debt as a country? Why is he worried about why the country is in debt? Because the country will always pay its debts. I'm sorry for the distortion, guys. The country will always pay for its debts.
Yeah, but you still have to balance it with your debt to GDP ratio?
Indeed, Hamoud. Yeah. But here's the thing. If you know you can pay,
yeah.
why are you going to worry? If you know you can pay,
mm-hmm.
why are you going to worry? If you ever look at the simplicity of Namibia's economy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we've got this imbalance regarding the extractive industries. Ne?
Yeah.
But the extractive industries do something.
There's one painful reliance.
That we have not figured out yet for the urban centers. The urban centers are supposed to have your factories and your processing plants positioned around them. But the urban center councillors are not doing their jobs.
The first question you have to find out is, what are you processing? Then you can set up the structure for that specific product.
Exactly. So, no, you first have to ask, what is being produced in my region? You know, as a regional governor,
mm-hmm.
the regional authority has to consult the governor because the governor's arm was appointed by the president.
Mm-hmm.
And so the president would want to know, what are the developmental objectives that you're achieving as a governor? So if I was the governor of a region, I would have gone and asked the regional authority guys, the chief regional officer,
mm-hmm.
I would have asked him, bruh, what do we produce? What do we produce in this region?
Oh, well, the good thing is that takes us to Kavango West. The state
Verna Sinimbos
region. State of the region address with the watermelon production and
looking
into watermelon juice value addition discussion.
Okay, she was keeping the line there. I don't know who was selling her that unicorn.
Hey.
But how much, do you know how many watermelons you have to produce for a juice?
Yeah.
Do you know that most of the juices we drink, if it doesn't contain orange juice or apple juice, you can forget about getting a juice.
You're going to have to...
You can forget about getting a juice from that fruit. Because the ingredient literally says, have you ever seen that weird ingredient where the South Africans write on their milk, on their juice cartons or containers, contains apple or pear?
Yeah.
Contains orange or nectarine?
Yeah.
It's either, because they realize they have to increase so much volume. They have to increase the volume of the product just to bottle the product.
You will find one that is like just, 100% orange.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what it says on the container.
Yeah.
It looks blended even when you're drinking it.
Yeah. You can even taste the blend.
I can even taste the blend.
Yeah.
But the thing is, 500 milliliter is about 20-something bucks.
Yes, Hamoud. And then you look at the container, the packaged container, that 500 ml comes out of. So that means 500 ml times 12 or times 6 or times 20 or times 24. You know, let's make it a 24 pack.
Yeah.
Now you've got to think, how many oranges did they have to press to make a 24 pack of 500 mils?
That's a lot of oranges.
And then remember, the shop doesn't just buy one 24 pack. The shop buys probably 10, 20 24 packs.
Yeah.
And those 24 packs were produced 6 months before they got to your shop. They were bottled and produced 6 months ago.
Yeah.
So what is the level of production of oranges and apples for you to produce 6 months in advance and to bottle and package 6 months in advance?
You know what would be a very excellent business model, especially for health enthusiasts?
Yeah.
You want to make healthy juice, take watermelon, for example.
Yeah.
And if you're going to add in, because watermelon is about 80 to 90% sugar, water, hence watermelon. If you want to take, for example, add in extra sweetening products to enhance the flavor, you can use honey.
Mm.
But the thing is, these two raw materials that you need to make that product, you should see the price of that product, because you are looking at watermelon and honey. Have you seen the price of honey? Are you kidding me? That thing is, last time I checked about, again, like I said, is it, the 500 milliliter size was about 80 something.
Mm.
Yeah. It's very easy to say, make this and make that, but if you just sit down and do the math of how much it's going to cost you to make the particular product that you're asking for, and then you now have to do like the ultimate math of, that determines on whether or not you should move on with that business idea, and that math is on how much is the production going to cost, and what profit am I going to make? Because at the end of the day, if you're not making profit, that business, even if you were crazy enough to go with it, you will painfully realize that it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
Now, on the whole debt thing, my point of view on debt has always been it's not the debt that's the problem. It's why you are borrowing the money that's the problem. If you are borrowing the money to spend, to invest, on a business idea you have in mind, that's a good debt. Borrowing money to chill,
Look, as long as it's not Mozambique, because that is chill.
That's the example I was.
That is chilling.
That's chilling, and even on a personal level, we do that. Now, if I go to, if I have a brilliant business idea, and they approach any financial institution, and they go through, they do their math, they're gonna give, they're most likely going to give me this money.
Mm.
But if I go to any financial institution and tell them, why are they giving me this money? Because they see the potential in the business idea that, he's going to be making about this much per month or this much per year. So it will be very easy for him to or her to basically pay back this debt.
Yeah.
But if you just show up with your weekend plans to a financial institution, you know what, I'll just be here for like 3 hours, pick up a couple of camborotos here. Any financial advisor will look at you and say, basically say one very noble thing, best case scenario.
Mm.
Security, get him the heck out of here. Because, because it doesn't make, borrowing for investment and borrowing for consumption, the consequences of both, of both ideas applies, are basically the same on whether it's an individual or a country.
Yeah.
And thank you for bringing up Mozambique, because Mozambique is an excellent idea. They went to borrow money under the false pretense of revamping their maritime infrastructure, which they didn't. They came home and basically started chopping that money. And what did that do to their mostly foreign investors?
Mm.
As soon as they found out, they were like, we're the ones that are going to foot that bill, because the financial institutions will sooner or later come to look for their money, and they will have to tax it out of us.
Indeed.
Because of their financial irresponsibility. So one of the biggest loss they had to face because of the tuna bond scandal, the biggest loss the Mozambican government, or basically Mozambique, had to face in term, as a result or an economic fallout of coming out of the tuna bond scandal, is because of the foreign investor withdrawal.
Yeah,
they were like, well, I didn't need the money. Why should I pay for it? Now, imagine yourself being a small business owner. You don't have anywhere to go. You are locally based.
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of options.
But that's also the concern, Ahmed, because it's obviously one of the biggest things that exists. For example, let's say in this SADC approach. The SADC approach speaks towards the key performance areas that are in line with what the, let's say, the government planners have in mind.
Yeah.
So the government planners have a government budget to achieve government goals, to tick government boxes, to cross government T's and to dot government I's. But the concern is still, okay, how do I get business across the region? So far, the only scope, the only capability and the only clout that has gotten business across Southern Africa have been the South Africans. So the South Africans have been the elephant clearing the path for us. The rest of us SADC guys, we are just, we are the Springbok, the Warthog, the V16 triple turbo jetted Warthog. The kudu, the other antelope. That's what South Africa has been clearing for us. But here's between each other. Because if you go today, Ahmed, now, even to Mozambique right now,
mm-hmm.
you'll go find a shop right there.
Yep, most likely.
You will find a shop right in Mozambique. You will find a shop right in, what's the other country's name? What's the other SADC country name? You will find a shop right in, what's that country's name? I know Zambia, Zimbabwe, yes. Angola, yes.
Malawi.
Because our colleague was there, the Francina. And she showed me a video of last year when the Angolans were protesting against the government subsidy for petrol. For fuel that was to be removed. And some of the images that I saw was, I saw this big ShopRite sign in the background. So ShopRite is there. What I'm surprised about is potentially it hasn't moved yet to Madagascar. Madagascar is a big market, Hamoud.
Yeah, it is.
In Southern Africa. It's a big market. Because the other markets are like established markets. So, if you ask the question in terms of what do we need a Namibian business to do to reach across the Southern African landscape, the unfortunate thing is we have to follow in the feet of what the South Africans are doing. Following in the feet of the South Africans, let me ask you another question. There's another elephant that South Africa also has from its own cluster of companies in its economy, MTN. MTN has most, since 2012, Helmut, MTN can't get its profits out of Iran.
They can't get their what?
Their profits out of Iran. Since 2012.
Okay.
Back in 2012, when Barack Obama was president for his first term, yeah. Remember his first term ran from 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, it ended in 2012. In 2012, the first round of severe sanctions, companies and especially banks who deal with Iran became a thing. And one of the countries who had businesses working with Iran was South Africa. And it was MTN on ICT. Now, MTN is one of Africa's largest, carriers, mobile cell phone carriers, but service providers. Let me just rather say so. They most recently are withdrawing out of Nigeria, them and ShopRite. But you would find...
I knew about ShopRite.
No, MTN is also... MTN had been in a long legal battle with the Nigerian government, with their CRAN, regarding registration of SIM cards. They've been in a long sort of like regulatory battle with Nigerian authorities. And the last I read about MTN was back in, not last year, in end of 2024, that they were contemplating, the board of directors here in South Africa were contemplating, you know what, let's just withdraw out of Nigeria. For ShopRite, what I read about ShopRite Nigeria is that ShopRite Nigeria will also withdraw out of Nigeria. There are issues there with regards to local, the Nigerians are doing what Namibia is doing here. They try to encourage, these foreign investors to buy from local farmers, but the local farmers are not producing. They're not producing, Helmut. Now, what will happen is obviously this means that those guys in ShopRite Nigeria will call ShopRite South Africa and say, hey, listen, export these various products to us, for us. And that potentially would become a major argument specifically in the African sphere of AFCFTA. But that is why I literally kept highlighting and sounding the alarm. If AFCFTA opens up, the South Africans will run crazy because this is what they want. This is what it's not about blocking. You should not block the South Africans, but you can clearly see where the other Africans don't have know-how. Sectoral know-how. What did that guy from Old Mutual South Africa say when we did the Davos discussion? It was him. The guy from AFCFTA, the other South African, and the president from, what was the president's name? Was it the president from Guinea or Gabon? The guy that sat between them.
Okay, wasn't that the one from, is it Ivory Coast? Or is it the
Ivorian president?
Ivory Coast was with Taka in Dubai because those events took place about approximately the same time.
Yeah, this is Davos, World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
When the guy from Old Mutual was talking and he said, we can't look at Africa as 54 or 55 different markets.
Yeah.
We have to look at Africa as one market, as an insurance company. Now, that's what the South Africans will do when they're economic planning. But, Hamoud, we listened to a guy from the financial sector that you highlighted just now.
Mm-hmm.
Look where the money goes. And that is where the economic planning starts. How do you approach, outside of SADC? How do you approach Rwanda? How do you approach on the other side of DRC? So we're using DRC as sort of like the last line, even though you can use Tanzania, this side, which borders onto Kenya.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you'll find ShopRite in Kenya as well, in Tanzania as well, and in Kenya. So how do you approach Rwanda on the east, of on the right hand side of DRC, how do you approach the other Congo across the river, which is also a French speaking market?
Yeah.
And a Cameroon and a this and a that. Because the South Africans are very, in terms of how their business business linkages work, is they follow technically most former British colony zones or territories. So South Africans obviously flowed into Namibia, Botswana, South Africa into Zambia, Zimbabwe. Then they skip Mozambique, which is an anomaly because it's a Portuguese speaking country.
Yeah.
Then you will find them in Kenya, because there's a lot of South Africans in Kenya. So there's business in Kenya. And then you will hear Nigeria, because the South Africans then go open up a business in what's his name? In the UK. Because I remember my brother asked me the other night, he saw, what's that bank's name? Investec. He saw an Investec ad somewhere on a YouTube video we were watching, and I told him, Investec is a South African bank. And he asked me, how did the South Africans get to the UK?
About that.
Old Mutual is also operating in the UK, Helmut. What's the other financial provider, service provider? You'll hear the English now talking about Nando's.
Oh.
The footballers that these guys love watching, you know, these English Premier League football. These guys promote Nando's left, right, and center there in the UK because they've never tasted Portuguese fried chicken before. Now and you find Nando's in New Zealand. You find Nando's in Australia because there are South Africans that live there. So where a South African goes, South African businesses follow. If South Africans go and say, oh, I'm going to go live there, I'm going to be there, I'd like this. Woolworths moved from South Africa to the UK to Australia. And many people in the UK and in Australia would think that Woolworths is an Australian or a country? A UK country. So we sit with these templates, these elephants, I'll call them the elephants, on the African continent, where they literally can be pioneers. Now, you highlighted, you know, the chill money syndrome.
Uh-huh.
Our neighbor to the north had the potential, Angola. Angola had the potential to help much of Southern Africa in terms of various other economic developments, but here's where things get problematic. The former president of Angola, Dos Santos's daughter, was in charge of what's that company's name?
Sonangol,
which is their national company.
Yeah, their Namco.
But the South Africans have two. They've got Sasol and the other one that deals with directly with petroleum and gas. Sasol is most the synthetic fuel producing one. And then the other one deals directly with fuel and gas.
So one is upstream, the other is downstream?
No, they both, the one is in synthetic fuels production.
Yeah.
That's why when I told you that Sasol is already in synthetic fuels, and they've been in synthetic fuels since the 80s, when South Africa was put under sanctions.
Yeah.
Now, what does that show you? There's a capacity and a capability to be strategic about things. And then, now, if South Africa could do synthetic fuels, why are we looking to oil and gas? We could have also stepped up with resilience.
Because, why not have two? Why just have one if you can have two?
Hamoud, there will come a time, since we are not making the cars, that the cars that will eat or use that specific product will not exist anymore.
Look, man, I don't mean to scare our investors, but here's the question you're not asking yourself. What do we get to lose? We are not investing our money into all this.
But that's the thing. Who's going to be in actual control of the resource?
The guys that are here to explore for all and, you know, spending all these billions of dollars in exploration and 9-10 years from now production, the chances are very high they're the ones that have shares in a lot of these car companies. Now, the transition, they'll just close everything down and be like, okay, goodbye.
But let me now ask you the next question. Yeah. And this is where you're using this example. So what we're currently doing is we're inviting someone into our backyard and into our front yard to come and have a braai in the front and build a swimming pool in the back, but they don't own the property. We've got the house, but we can only live in our room.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to ask for permission to use the toilet in the bathroom and the kitchen.
Yeah.
While these guys are using the property.
Yeah, because they have the money. Look, keep up. You know, it's like going to chill with when you are broke.
Mm.
But there is this guy that is very loaded. Everything he says, you just say yes.
Oh, yeah, he's the kid with the football.
Exactly. Thank you very much.
He decides the match.
He decides when the match starts, when a halftime will be.
How long the match will be. Who's on his team? Who's the ref?
Players goes to his team, otherwise there's not going to be any match.
Yeah. And he must play striker.
Yeah.
You can't even say, I'm going to be the favorite footballer, because he'll tell you, I am that footballer.
You can't dribble him.
You can't tackle him.
Yeah. It's against the law of that particular game.
Yeah, you can't tackle him. You may not tackle him. You can stand in front of him.
Yeah.
Just to give him something to practice on.
And what he says goes. Even if he's telling the referee to substitute himself, he will have to substitute himself and replace him with, he's the boss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did love it sometimes, Hamut, because that match didn't last long, because there was always a rebellion.
Oh, yeah, there's always one.
I always used to love that. You just give it 5 minutes of gameplay.
That game is
over. And then everyone is just like, Neman, take your ball. We don't get anyone. Yeah, so I do like scenarios like that, because you allow the person to have some format of control, and then a full-on French Revolution erupts like 10 minutes into the match, and then it's just chaos.
Yeah.
And then even the owner of the ball goes like, I'm not going to play with you anymore. And then you say, well, that's democracy. Everybody has got an opinion here.
Look, the interesting thing about that is that 90% of the time, the owner of the ball has zero soccer skills. And the one with all the dribbling skills doesn't have a power over the ball. So there's always this power dynamic. Now, the rest are now torn in between. Who should we side with? Should we side with the guy that has all the skills or the one that has the ball? Now, you know that for the most part, the owner of the ball will pick the best players and then leave you with self-goal scoring guys.
Mm.
So they can basically make fun of you, the entire game.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, this whole thing is, if you, for me, it always boils down to, again, the money. All boils down to the money. Now, I believe if a multinational like Shell, for example, is pouring billions of dollars in a business venture, they have done the math of some of the, of the possible risks. They basically weighed the options between the risks, the pros and the cons, before deciding to, at least their shareholders and their board of directors gave the guys, the minion guys on the ground, go ahead. In other words, they basically, excellent. Here is one excellent one.
Mm.
Well, you did say that all the money that they are running around, investing is insured, right?
Yes.
Yeah, then leave us enjoy our oil. The processing part, on the other hand.
The actual downside is, Hamutne,
is
oil does have, what do you call it? A countdown timer. It's got a timer associated to it.
It's finite.
Yeah. Well, not finite. Not the resource itself.
Yeah.
The trying to achieve extraction before the thing that we spoke about yesterday, before green hydrogen literally goes completely bonkers. It goes wild. It's being produced in such large quantities that Namibia's trade statistics can't even keep track with the amount of production we are processing. Now, here is the other flip side. The other flip side is the fear of who's going to work where. Because Yes, we know, even though the numbers with regards to the green hydrogen program back in 2021, when the first announcements came about, the 200,000 to 400,000 potential employment creation, at least they gave a number. The oil and gas guys still have not said, even though we have the baseline service, the baseline study, yeah, report, which does indicate that there will be extensive participation. Here's the big thing, Helmut. How many Namibians will be participating in terms of local content participation? And what roles will they have? Will they just be, once again, like with green hydrogen, the cookers, the cleaners, the construction workers, the candlestick makers, the butchers, the plumbers? Will they have these other low-end jobs? Not low-paying, low-end jobs.
I think that's where, you know, that's where the Namibian government and the Ministry of Education now comes in, because it's about, like you pointed out yesterday, that you know, about the gentleman who's who did his studies in Germany.
Yeah, I keep forgetting the guy's name, surname.
Yeah,
the engineer.
Yeah, that basically, you know, what he made about the different levels that, he, in terms of technical skills, that's offered in Namibia, and the level of technical skills that's required for one to participate in this industry. So that means the Namibia's technical institutions, basically, if we want to enable Namibians to participate in that industry, we will have to match their skills requirement.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if we're having that conversation.
If it is happening,
yeah,
it's probably a very tiny one.
Yeah, you see, the scary thing is, like, you know, about the tiny part of the discussion is that if we are just beginning to have the conversation now, that means we don't have a lot of time to basically, to ramp up that skills development to participate in the green hydrogen.
Because, no, we are. That's currently happening.
Look, if it's happening, well, we're good.
Yeah.
If it's happening, we're good. But for the oil and gas, I think we have, enough time for you to get a PhD in petroleum engineering before we reach production.
No, there's not enough people. We don't even have enough welders for that thing.
The thing is, welders, because that requires like a whole different type of welding skills, because you're talking about welding offshore and welding underwater. I didn't even know that was a thing, but, you know, because our, you know, oil and gas explorations are taking place about 300 kilometers offshore, that means welding underwater, which is, something I didn't know existed until a couple of weeks ago. We will obviously have to, upskill the technical institutions or technical, or apprentices, as they are, that's the right name, I'm told, you know, apprentices in that direction. So the green hydrogen industry, the green hydrogen initiative seems to be progressing faster in comparison to the oil and gas one. That means if you want to ramp up your skills in, skills so you can participate in the green hydrogen industry, you'll have to work faster because, boy, that industry is at a breakneck speed. But for oil and gas, 2034, 2035, I would say, yeah, you can just go to school, study petroleum engineering, become a petroleum engineer by 2035. I'm sure you can even get yourself a PhD in petroleum engineering. Then you can participate. Boy, let's go for a break.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwata fanona monika ko Eagle FM konora etatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma felane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and 9 minutes into the hour of five. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. It's a Friday, your drive time show at this time of the day, here as always until the hour of six. So, the whole discussion's taking place in Washington, and Africa's participation, SADC's participation to be specific. That is that's an interesting one, considering the global financial architecture was set up just shortly after Second World War, and it's been dominated for the most part by by Western countries, and now there is a competition now kicking in from the East, mostly from China. So that's one of the hush-hush conversation in the world of global finance in terms of the available infrastructure, because for a very long time, especially shortly after the fall of the Soviet Union, the Western world just went bananas. The whole world was their playground.
Mm.
Now you have competitions emerging. You have China. You have economies like India. You have Russia in that bucket. But one question I never actually asked myself about the fall of the Soviet Union is, someone made a video about it, which basically painted a very scary picture. Because the question he asked was, if you look at what's going on in the Middle East right now and the chaos it's causing to the global economy,
yeah,
I can't imagine what happened to the chaos people had to go through because of how the fall of the Soviet Union, the ripple effect that the fall of the Soviet Union caused to global economy. Because this was a major participant of global economy.
What actually happened, Helmut, was actually, it actually broke up. It didn't fall.
It broke up, basically fragmented.
Yeah, because one of the lovely things what English does now is you get exposed to American and British media.
Yeah.
And then they will come and call things, for example, like OPEC is, according to them, a cartel. And because OPEC makes a price. But then when you get to the United States, there are one or two companies there that decide for the whole United States.
Yeah.
Or you've got Microsoft, which tries to monopolize everything, because no one is asking questions. Why is Microsoft on every computer as a standard operating system product?
Yeah, we basically accepted it like it's a norm at this point, buy Windows or Mac.
So when we look at this particular scenario, and this is obviously how I'm also patching SADC's particular approach to its economic integration in, is SADC's economic integration is literally built off of South African companies.
Yeah.
It's a given. The unfortunate scenario from that template, Helmut, is, are we at one stage going to start looking at our own plastic production, at our own highly trained, highly skilled workers? Because Africans now want to adopt AI, but we don't understand AI. Look, you and I understand AI sitting here. But I'm talking about the everyday person who probably doesn't use AI in their daily work. Do you understand?
90% of them just use it, and you know, you can use AI without knowing you're using AI before you, because it's just a cell phone.
Exactly, and it's just a smartphone that needs data. But when people really go and look at, when you go really look at the scenario of what's the next 10, 20 years of Namibia's economic planning, the next 10, 20 years, Helmut, cannot be based upon diamonds, uranium, copper, gold, petroleum. The first three I'm mentioning will still be acceptable, because gold is even used in electronic manufacturing. Copper is definitely needed in electronic manufacturing, but then uranium will obviously help with energy security, and diamonds, you know, we will still see if natural diamonds will still be a thing in the future, in the next 20 years.
That market is dying really fast, if you ask me.
Exactly. Which is the concern that you've got to look at, is who will be able to buy these things in the future? And you're going to apply, and you go in and apply the other funny indicators of what the price of a diamond today will be 20 years from now. You know, the inflationary impacts.
Yeah, I think diamonds are going to be there. It's just natural diamonds, hardly think so.
Yeah. So then take another look. Take another particular position in terms of another perspective. Another perspective would be then, what will Namibia's economy look like in relation to these particular resources? Will Namibians still be told every year in the National Assembly, diamond sales didn't work, this didn't work, that was looking promising, but Namra was collecting? Will we still be told these things, or will we be looking at Namra's particular involvement in collecting from the processing sector, the manufacturing sector, this sector accounted for this much particular revenue generation? There are so many Namibians working. Yes, we don't hear about labor statistics. There are so many Namibians working in these particular sectors. So much from the payers you earn had been collected of the private sector. We have so many Namibians that, unfortunately, because of economic trends taking place at the time, were impacted. They lost their jobs. So many companies closed down. No, we're not getting those stats every year in our national budget sessions in Parliament. Why? Because we get told just from what mining has done, what Namra has done, and there will be a change on the smokers and the beer drinkers' prices later in the year, because the sin taxes are an easy cash grab for governments. It's the easiest products to punish with a price increase, and unfortunately, Namibians drink. Namibians drink, Helmut.
I'm Namibian. You don't have to tell me.
If you're a beer brewing company, like one of our advertising clients, Namibia Breweries or NBL, who even indicated that they have recorded, you know, a positive financial position after their financial year. That this is what, 2 weeks back when I went to that particular unveiling, when they announced such particular, you know, position. Yes. Their position is obviously based before the minister made her statement on 28 February, right? Because the financial year is 12 months, obviously. The important thing you can still look forward to is that they would want more Namibians to consume more of the product by the end of their next financial year, which is next year, end of February, middle March. So the idea is still, in a private company, in a private sector scenario, is that the private sector company would say, yes, even though, you know, the price of cigarettes and alcohol went up for our customers, We still made profits. We know our customers. So our customers will still come back tomorrow.
Yep.
They're not boycotting the product, even though the government sees more taxes to be made from the product. And remember, Namibians are paying the VAT on the product, plus the sin taxes.
Yeah.
the extra increments.
Yeah.
So it's potentially close to 20% that Namibians are paying on anything alcoholic and anything tobacco. Helmut, 20% is not VAT. Because VAT is 15.
First of all, the running joke that I've run into in Namibia, especially during the times of elections, is that Namibian political parties must be thankful that Namib Brewery is not a political party. Otherwise, they would be in the executive office by now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all the ministers will come out of their company.
Yep. We'll just be coming from there, making laws and making alcohol. And
we'll
the same
be Dutch owned.
Because now, especially now that the youthful population, keeps dominating the adult population.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's one thing that's coming out of, one thing that's basically being said about the World Bank and IMF spring events. And this links me to the point you just made in reference to the USSR, that it didn't fall, it fragmented.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, makes sense about pretty much all empires, like even was that during the death of Alexander the Great and the Greek Empire basically fragmented, and the Ptolemaic dynasty takes over Egypt, which was like the breadbasket of the whole empire. From the Springs meetings discussion, one thing that's said in reference to that is the discussion highlighted opportunities to deepen cooperation in trade, investment, youth empowerment, public health, resilience, building, particularly in small states, six of which are members of both SADC and the Commonwealth.
Mm.
If you look at what's going, what's listed here, this is the same type of, we have a trade relationship, an investment relationship with China.
Yeah.
Yeah. How far do you think it goes before this starts causing a friction in policy discussions? Because one thing that has become very clear is that the US and China are engaged in a tug of war on a lot of levels, especially in the financial market. Now, for those of us that are like participants, and we just want to trade.
Yeah.
We are not interested in whatever, debt they owe each other and why they want to kick the heck out of each other. When China brings a proposal about investment, trade and, diplomatic relations, we want to participate with them because they are a tech giant. Now, when the West is coming with their own proposals, and that makes me sort of like, proud of the U.S. Piece of work, which is national security strategy, and in reference and what it says in reference to Africa, that they are shifting from handout type of relationship to a trade type of relationships. Now this is where negotiation strategy now comes in. This is where negotiation strategy comes in. It's why I shared with you the document about the US at this point basically is strong arming the EU into handing over their data.
Not yet. Not yet. Because the nice thing is, Samud, that document, and this is why I always have faith specifically. You could see the process because the request that was there was, will they hand it over?
That's the question.
Because even there's even an agency that is responsible for the GDPR, for its implementation and enforcement in the EU.
Yeah.
The question is, will they hand it over? Mm-hmm. And if they hand it over, under what conditions? Because primarily this is linked to travel data.
Yep.
They want all data of European citizens who have access to a Schengen visa, mm-hmm. which Namibian skimmers also apply for.
Yeah.
And the problematic scenario was that the Europeans are already seeing, oh, so you want to track and trace EU citizens mm-hmm. wherever they are in the world.
Why?
Let me explain it to you how they will do it, Helmut. Mm-hmm. Here's one of the downsides of what the US is requesting. So, dear listeners, if you don't know what we're also highlighting into, because economic integration is based upon data as well, not the single determinant. Economic integration also looks at an integration of immigration systems. So if you, Helmut, you decide, okay, I'm going to go visit my family. Let's say one of your cousins lives in Luanda, not across the river that you are used to currently right now.
Yeah.
I'm talking about something somewhere far off in Angola. And SADC has reached this level of integration, of economic integration, because economic integration means this thing that we've got with Botswana, where the Botswanans and us Namibians, we just have to show our ID at the border.
Yeah.
And then we can walk across. But us Namibians, we need the new ID because the ID needs to be scanned.
It needs to have a barcode.
Yeah, it must have those biometric features. So let's say we reach the same level with all other SADC members, like what we've got with Botswana.
Botswana, yeah.
We reach the same level with all other SADC members, including South Africa and the two kingdoms in South Africa, Lesotho and Eswatini. So now you decide, Helmut, you want to go visit a cousin that lives somewhere in Luanda.
Yeah.
And you scan, everything goes through. Now Namibia knows that you walked across the border, you were scanned out, and Angola knows that you were now scanned in. Do you understand?
Yeah.
They can literally see in real time.
Don't they already do that with passports?
They do that with passports, yeah. but think about the processing.
Yeah.
Remember, the moment you bring in some sort of a digital processing ability that processes things in real time and not in batch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the key terms that I learned back in 2003 was with regards to principles of information systems, that was the subject's name, was you've got to look at how computers in your daily life provide processing abilities to simplify complex actions that you as a human conduct. For example, Helmut, you go to your ATM 3 times a day. Now, instead of the bank processing your 3 withdrawals mm-hmm. during the course of the day, at the end of the day, they do real-time processing, meaning you've got a balance in your account, and every time that you came there and you withdrew something, they recorded the transaction against the balance in your bank account. Instead of recording 3 transactions at the end of the day, but the balance still stayed the same. That's what currently is happening with the passport systems in immigration.
Mm-hmm.
You get processed at the end of the day or at the end of the week. However, with what I'm explaining now, is that Namibia sees that you walked out.
Yeah.
And Angola sees that you walked in. Okay. Helmut drives all the way now to Luanda. You go visit your family and XYZ and all that and all that. But you tell the immigration official on the Angolan side, I'm only going to be in Angola. Then you decide, you know what? I want to go and enjoy life in Lusaka. Let me go and see what's happening in Zambia. And Helmut drives eastwards from Luanda. You drive eastwards to the Angola-Zambia border. So now Angola records you on a different border as going out. And Zambia records you as coming in. But you told Angola's border post here with Namibia, I'm only going to be here for 5 days. And I'm just going to Luanda. They didn't know that you were deciding to go to Lusaka. So now Lusaka is like, okay, Helmut, we see that you recorded and you said that you would only
only be here for 5 days.
You will only go to Angola. Why are you coming to Zambia now? Then you go like, ah, you know what? I've got, there's this nice girl I met on a dating site, you know, and she said, come to Lusaka. And that's what I'm pursuing now. And then they let you through. Helmut goes through to Lusaka. But Helmut didn't come back to Namibia. went directly into Zambia from Angola. But that would be the level of regional integration that that SADC is trying to achieve. Now, think about that same situation, Hamoud, but think about it between SADC and, let's say, Mercosur in South America. That's what the U.S. wants. Now, remember, Namibia doesn't have a data protection law yet. Namibia doesn't have a cybersecurity law yet. Mm-hmm. Namibia doesn't have... What was the other one that we identified that comes with these two cyber... cyber bills? Oh, yeah.
Cybersecurity?
No, that's, yeah, that's cybersecurity was the other one I mentioned. But try to think about it now as a SADC level as well. SADC then needs to elevate and have the same kind of protections across all member nations as well. Because remember, DRC is a French speaking country.
Yeah.
So they potentially would have a different idea in terms of the background on law that is influenced from Belgium.
Yeah.
Which would then be a representation from the EU laws. Through them. Madagascar the same, was a French country, was a French colony at one stage. So Madagascar would have at its bedrock or its foundation for law, French laws. So how do we balance this integration? Because integration speaks about also the protection of rights that you would enjoy in your country, in your host country, but how would you enjoy them across the region? Now that's what the Americans are trying to do to the EU guys. The EU guys already have regional integration.
Mm-hmm.
And they already have laws that were elevated from their national laws to protect the region.
You know, one of the reason why that has been, I traced this to back to February. Why there has been a lot of backlash, even today there's a lot of backlash, obviously on any topic in a country or a region, any topic that you're going to bring up, people will be polarized. There are people that will be for, there are people who will be against. Then you have a small proportion of people that will say, you know what, I don't care about this whole thing. But much of the proponents of the whole data, sharing information with, like the EU giving that information to the US, proponents are obviously, they're obviously pointing out to the positive, to the positives that one being the border security problem, yeah. Border security, well, safety, component. The people that are basically against that idea, what they're pointing out is more of a big tech thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that brings us back to the discussion we had on digital sovereignty and the French discussion on them trying to basically replace all the government government officials' computers with switching them from Windows to Linux, which is still a discussion. It haven't been implemented yet.
Mm.
Now you have two conflicting information here. That's the point I'm making. You have they want a digital sovereignty. Now, this is the EU. They want a digital sovereignty. So, you and I went through all the alternatives of basically everything from communication browsers and operating systems that they want, that they want to bring into the EU so that they can move away from the EU, so they can move away from US big tech.
Mm.
And now they're considering, just handing over information which basically negates the whole alternative, technology idea.
Mm.
Now, the reason why that is somewhat concerning is the fact that big tech is dominating the governance space.
Yeah.
And it's dominating governance space in a way that is somewhat concerning, so concerning in a way that the UN Secretary General in his 2026 priorities press statement pointed out that we are seeing a significant shift of power, not from government to the people, but from government to private technological, to private technology companies.
Mm.
These are your Palantir. These are your Oracle. Now, these guys, one thing that that a lot of us don't value is just how important information is, which is why every time we just take pictures and then just throw it on the internet like that, not forgetting that that picture is basically, that's a gold mine for Oracle.
It is.
It has a lot of information that they can use for a lot of things. One of the most common thing is targeted advertising. Now, all these things, I mean, we don't value just how important information is because we don't, I think it makes sense. We don't make a lot of money from the information. It's just a picture or it's just a video. But the thing is, for the EU here, for me, it's, they are providing somewhat conflicting information.
Yeah.
One, they want to move away from America's, tech industry because, tech has gained a lot of power in the US. And this is just not power with regards to information that they are in control of. Well, their military uses navigation and targeting softwares and everything that they use. It's coming out of where? It's coming out of tech. That means tech controls a large part of not just the American, but the Israeli military. And generally, there's nothing wrong with that.
But it's also how you get to the information.
Yeah. Who is gathering the information? And after this information is gathered, how is it distributed? That's what the GDPR is about.
But you know what the American tech guys do, which is something that the Indian tech developers are doing.
What's that?
The moment you go walk on that street, Hamid, on that street to go and get a cab,
yeah,
you forfeit at any particular rights to privacy.
Please elaborate.
The moment it is a public space.
Yeah.
They feel, yeah, these tech companies,
yeah,
it is bonanza time to collect, to harvest.
Mm-hmm.
So the moment that you are in a public sphere which they enjoy, that, and that's why these tech companies proliferated so extensively, you know, they became so big,
yeah,
and grew so large, is because they could harvest what they can debate is, which they can defend this mm-hmm. this basis, this premise.
Mm-hmm.
They can debate and they can defend that you were out in the public sphere. So the moment you walk, you switch on your computer,
mm-hmm.
and you click on your web browser,
mm-hmm.
to connect you to the internet,
mm-hmm.
you are in the public sphere.
Now,
I can track you.
That brings up a giant misinformation debate, which means most of the softwares that they provide, they have, they are promising a certain level of security. The same thing goes for your cell phone. You are provided, you are told you have this number of security, you have your PIN, you have your password, you have this level of encryptions that's associated with this operating system.
Yeah.
But just how true is that? Now, the good thing is that point you just made was also made by one lady when she said, when DeepSeek came out. A lot of people were like, this information that DeepSeek was built on, chances are very high it was stolen from American tech companies. So the question she asked was, let's just entertain the idea that the information that DeepSeek was built on was stolen from the US or American tech companies. Let's go further than that.
Mm.
The information that they build their software from, who did they borrow it from or who did they ask it from? The deeper you go in that question, the more you realize that when you're dealing with, especially with situations like Cambridge Analytica and Meta, the whole, it was a 2015 scandal, you see that a lot of tech companies are, well, technically stealing most of the information that they are using to train their models. So when someone steals it, you claim that it was stolen, it brings up the discussion of the British Museum.
Are you talking about the...
You also stole it.
The Benin bronzes.
Egyptology. Look, if something gets stolen in the British Museum, they can't... And this happened last year. There were a bunch of artifacts that went missing in the British Museum, so they came out and basically went on the internet and started appealing to the general public to help them figure out the way about of the stolen artifacts.
About finding...
It became a meme just like that.
What they stole,
yeah,
was stolen from them.
Uh-huh. Now, most of the tech companies are operating on the British Museum principle. They are harvesting information without consent for the most part,
mm,
and then building a large language models on them. If someone steals that information, I'll be like, did they steal it though?
Here's another thing. for example, if you look at Microsoft's existence, the idea, Hamoud, is you can clearly see that in the United States, they're using their own government to advance the interests of their private sector.
Yeah.
You don't see that in Namibia. Because the moment you see that in Namibia, it's ACC that will be on speed dial very quickly.
Yeah, that's because what we have is corruption here. It's called lobbying, that side. So it's legal.
Or, in South Africa, it's state capture.
Language is everything.
Language is everything. I now realize it. My goodness, 5 years later, I now realize it. Lobbying in the US and in the UK, ACC
is going to be looking for you.
ACC will have work to, in here in Namibia.
They'll be busy. Just right.
And they will open up, they will revive a whole bunch of commissions in South Africa.
Yeah.
With regarding to state capture.
Yeah.
But when we look at this, Hamoud, ask yourself the question, why are there rules for us? But there are no rules for how these particular, that's why I love saying that Namibia's, the ideas that us Africans have about democracy is not a democracy that comes out of the United States that can easily be undermined and circumvented, because the Americans in their own constitution speak about we the people. That's just the opening line of their constitution, we the people. And then at the heart of that, when that document was written there in the 17 whatevers of the United States, they had slaves. People that were disenfranchised, that were disadvantaged for 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when was Martin Luther King's death? Him and Malcolm X, they must died like in the same 10 years. In the 1960s. Yeah, they died in the 1960s.
Yeah.
Because Martin Luther and JFK died, I think, the same year, 66 or 65. I think, under correction. But they died in the 60s, along Malcolm X as well. And what was at the heart of Martin Luther King and JFK and Malcolm X's particular, what were they championing? Basic human rights.
Yeah.
So for 200 years, almost 200 years, Americans who were of other skin colors didn't have the same rights as European Americans. I'm going to call them European Americans because they came from Europe.
Yeah.
Than European Americans. So now we sit with a scenario, Hamoud, of asking a question. So whose actual democracy does a country like Namibia follow? Then you find out, the term republic, because the Americans also use the name republic, the word republic for themselves. Our republic, technically, our idea in Africa comes from the French Republic.
You know, the thing about the whole democracy discussion is, I always argue that it's not a form of government or a form of economic system that's the problem.
Mm.
It will always boil down to people. The internet, Dwight, is flooded with dating websites.
I know.
Yeah. Now, even when it comes to that, I always argue it's not the apps that's the problem. It's the users. Because everyone is looking for tall, dark, and handsome. And 90% of the time they run into, just dark, minus the tall and handsome. And then we run into the issues of, maybe on this app there's someone, and then on this app. And then the Epstein files basically, tall, dark, handsome, and rich. And all white, tall, handsome, and rich.
But don't you remember what Matthias told us here outside of the studio two weeks back? The ladies don't care how you got your money, as long as you are rich. They don't care.
How is that new?
They don't care what you look like, whether you look like a frog or like Prince Charming.
Hitler had a wife.
I know. He had a wife. No. And she was an actress.
No.
I thought we were still going to stay on failed Austrian painter.
Oh no, I threw away the whole title of Failed.
Yeah, Austria. Yeah. Here's a good meme that helps you.
The whole. Seriously. Look, I threw away the whole failed Austrian painter and just started to go with Hitler because, everyone runs around saying, Leopold. I'm like, well, what's the difference? When it comes to democracy, the first question, to ask oneself when it comes to democracy is that it's just like any institution. When it works for you, it's a good thing. Like any institution, when it's working for you, it's a good thing. When you are, even, it's the same with oppression. When I'm being oppressed, it's a bad thing. But when I'm oppressing someone, I find millions of different ways to justify what I'm doing. And that's why you read a lot of stories of American slaves that were freed. And their first order of business after they were freed was start running a business that's based on what? Slavery. And the founding fathers of the U.S., most of them were running away from where? From what? Oppression. Then they went to set up a whole empire that was based on oppression.
They didn't want to pay tea taxes.
Uh-huh. They even protested and started pouring the tea, the tea out of boats into the sea.
Just imagine how those poor sea creatures felt. I would sing this foreign substance in your water. What's this flavor? Oh my goodness, it's tea.
You know, the luckiest sea creatures are those that were on board Titanic when it went down. Like, hang on a second. Are we home?
We've been released.
It turns out the situation was reversed. The chefs were dying. And the food was, we had just been granted freedom. But there's one gentleman, though, that survived. He was a chef. He was British. He was just drinking the whole time when the ship was sinking. And he was a... 70, he was about 50 to 60% wasted when he was saved. Now, that man did not just study cooking, he studied chemistry. Alcohol is an antifreeze.
Yeah, but that's why I read.
Man was a genius.
That's why I read the one time, it was a story in Russia, here before the sanctions. So it was a bunch of lumberjacks in Russia. And they literally went to the bar. And they literally finished the whole alcohol in the bar. The whole vodka.
That's very Russian.
And then here's the humdinger of the statement. And then the guys still wanted more alcohol. And then they decided, you know what? Let's go drink the antifreeze from the cars.
Huh?
Till today, I will never participate in an activity where we don't, where, if I'm with a bunch of guys, where we don't know when to stop drinking. Because I don't want to reach that level. Even, yes, at my age, I don't want to reach that level. Because that is just dangerous. How do you finish a bar's...
Now you're just poisoning yourself heavily.
Quota of alcohol. Just to step outside and you guys are like, guys, I'm not drunk enough now. We must continue this. Oh!
At this point, your liver wants to kill you.
The trucks have antifreeze. Let's go drink the antifreeze. How did you get to an antifreeze?
That's a whole another level of being
an alcoholic beverage replacement. And guess what? A whole bunch of those guys died and a whole bunch were hospitalized.
Yeah, it's antifreeze. It says the world, there's a reason why it's in the car.
Well, it doesn't seem like
it's... There's a reason why it's in a car, not...
It didn't stick with some people, Hamut, so that it's just past me. I don't know how we get there. But it also should be that our integration should not reach that level. Where we have to share such stories with each other. Well, I've not seen any Angolans drink. I'm sorry. Angolans... Look. You know, if I'm ever going to open up a nightclub, I'm literally going to ban Angolans because they don't drink. I'm really sorry for the Angolan, but I've observed you guys in clubs. You guys come and buy Nestle bottled water. What kind of a business model is that? You show up and you buy bottled water.
Which Angolans have you met? Because the ones I know.
Well, the ones I've seen there in Ohangwena, they're drinking local brews there. I'm talking about getting to an establishment, you pay for money to get in, you buy the drinks and stuff across the bar. You don't buy my bottled water. You buy bottled water with the alcoholic beverage, not bottled water only.
The Angolans I know can drink like crazy. But so far, the alcoholic, alcoholic beverage bottle emptying machines that I know.
Mm.
Angolans, I think, would come in second. Zambians. Zambians can drink. Yeah. That.
Don't even compete with Zambians.
Yeah, that explains Zambezi.
Don't even compete with Zambians.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Look, the South Africans, they drink, but they love Black Label.
Oh. Of all things?
Of all things, they drink Black Label. And that's where I discovered when I went here into Zambia and Zimbabwe, I discovered that the Black Label produced in Zambia tastes different than the Black Label made in Zimbabwe. And I'm not even a Black Label consumer.
Different alcohol content or what?
Well, I had to gravitate to Black Label because the local Zambian options were horrible. I'm sorry if you're Zambian and listening. It was horrible.
Local option will be horrible everywhere.
No, but Namibia's local option beats international options. Except for the one international option I know, Grolsch. You know, that's a pretty it's a pretty good beer, Helmut.
Look, at this point, I don't even know why. You know, with the whole integration and Africa Continental Free Trade Area discussion, I don't even know why Ombike is not gone mainstream.
After what I felt from Ombike?
Yeah.
Helmut, how do I get the hangover the next day?
Brace yourself. That's all I can tell you.
You don't want people feeling the hangover the next day, Helmut.
Well, the advice will be you only drink this on Friday. Don't drink it on Sunday, otherwise you're not going to go to work.
Okay, not hangover. What happened with me was I just felt under the influence. And I was on my way to having my breakfast. Who wants slow poison in their lives?
No, look, that's the difference between other alcoholic beverages and Ombike. For other alcoholic beverages, if you drink a lot of it, you'll be under the influence.
Yeah.
With Ombike, you'll be under slavery.
Look, that's why it should just be a family recipe and a family thing. Ne? No one wants slow poison.
Look, it's like shots. You don't have to take the whole bottle. Just take enough for you.
Yeah, Dwight did not know that. Dwight did not know, don't swallow the whole thing.
That was a mistake.
Dwight did not know, because people were waiting for the cup. Because people were looking at me.
So you thought you could drink Ombike in a hurry? Jesus, man.
I did not know. The unwritten rule was, don't consume in a rush.
Yeah, don't.
But we were going through demonstrations. The auntie and the uncle were there dishing out to people. And I was like, but there's only one cup. Must I now, chill, go and stand outside and chill with a cup? No. So I had to drink in a rush.
Why were you even drinking? Look,
it was part of the demonstration, Helmut. That's what us
part of the demonstration?
Yeah. If you get into the field, Helmut, that's what we go through. You are sometimes a guinea pig.
That was a terrible idea. Look,
go tell NDBs, people.
My philosophy when it comes to drinking is, beer for recreation. Yeah. Beer for recreation. Wine for parties.
Yeah.
And then you have, strong stuff like your Scotch whiskey.
Mm.
Yeah, Scotch whiskey, that's for divorce. For breakup, I would go with,
For divorce?
Yeah, so you need Scotch whiskey for divorce.
Why?
Although in Namibia, let's just say Ombike for divorce.
Yeah.
You're going through tough time, man. You need something strong. Bring me a soft drink when I'm going through divorce. I will murder you. Just know who to give. Well, just
I'll give you yogurt, Helmut.
Yogurt? How old am I? 10?
Why would you want to be drunk after divorcing?
Well, I miss the lady who just took half my property. I'm not saying it's the property I miss more.
Why would you?
Officially, it's the property.
Why in 2026 would you sign?
In community.
And end in nuptial.
In community of property.
Why would you marry in community? In 2026.
Okay, this is
knowing the caliber of the opposite gender.
Knowing the divorce statistics.
No, the caliber of the opposite gender.
The excuse I've heard is we were in love.
Yes, that's what the men say. It's not what women say.
What
don't
women
talk
say?
To the ladies.
Didn't I
tell you just what our colleague Matthias said when he goes to the salon? Don't ask me why he said he's going to the salon. I also didn't ask. Matthias goes to the salon.
No, don't worry.
He talks to the other gender because he was the married guy. Talks to the other gender and the other gender says, no, we don't care what he looks like as long as he's got money. So whether you look like a frog.
I like those ones. They were being honest.
Or whether you look like Prince Charles. Yeah, they're being honest to a married man because they know his wife.
Mm-hmm.
They're not being honest to the guy who does not know them.
Well, if they that be just listen to Matthias' show for the honest answers.
Salon diaries, yes.
Yeah.
You can get all the salon diaries there.
There if a salon man.
from Matthias. But the concern of that kind of scenario, right, is that you as a bachelor, you literally were feeling something. Your heart was beating. The blood was rushing. The decisions, the right decisions were just not made because foolish decisions started popping up.
Fasten a seatbelt. Look.
And then you're divorced.
I'm going to go with Robin Williams on this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
What can you learn from a fellow media person?
Very awesome. Very easy. I totally agree with his point of view of men's anatomy. The man has two heads, one above his shoulder, one below his shoulder. The thing is...
One below the belt line.
One below the belt line. The problem is the head below the belt line have never made a rational decision. Not for Father Abraham, not for King Solomon, not for Simson, not for David. They've all...
I'm so glad the ancient Jewish kings feature in there.
The father of faith got into trouble.
Even Genghis Khan...
Who am I? Come on, man.
Even Genghis Khan didn't think rationally.
No, he didn't.
Not even Alexander the Great.
The thing is, Robin Williams' point of view is that... God gave men two heads, but not enough blood to run all of them at the same time. That means when one is in operation, it takes over all the blood, the other one goes offline.
We are binary.
Yeah.
It switches on and it switches off. Okay, before we continue, Amud, let's quickly take an ad break. Vavitcha University for the 2026 July applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. Candidates must follow the following admission requirements. Candidates must have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF Level 7 or higher from any recognized higher learning institution. Candidates must be a registered nurse or midwife with the Nursing Council of Namibia or the HPCNA. Candidates must have a minimum of 2 years working experience as a nurse or midwife in any health facility. And candidates must be able to write a short essay describing the motivation for pursuing the postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration is 1 year. Mode of delivery will be full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vavitcha University, where everyone is an achiever. So yeah, the two-head syndrome, Helmut.
That's the case for our gender. And the problem is that the less clothes the madam is wearing, the more all the blood gravitates to the head that have never made a good decision apart from the continuation of human species. Now,
don't worry, guys. There is an age limit where you just become immune. Yes.
Don't ruin my day.
Yes, Amit. You just become immune. No, I'm not talking about becoming, what's the word? Impotent.
Uh-huh.
I'm not talking about impotency. Mm. I'm talking about immune.
Really? That explains why a lot of billionaires are in their 80s.
You're not 35 yet, ne?
Mm?
You're not 35 yet.
I am.
You are? Yeah. Okay, it starts from 35. And she can be smoking hot.
I was going to, you know.
You will ignore that person. You will still love your own, even if your significant other looks like the frog, the opposite gender of a male frog.
Is that a,
even if she looks like Jabba the Hutt's wife?
Seriously?
You know. Even if she looks like.
Okay.
Even if she looks like. Master Yoda's opposite gender, you know, of that alien species.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, Hamoud.
All right.
You will still be in love with your Yoda-ness, Mrs. Yoda situation, or Mrs. Jabba the Hutt.
Right.
I'm not saying you specifically. I'm saying
I went to an event with a female friend on our way back home. The guy that stopped to ask my female friend, are you not the one from last night? And she was like, what, last night? This is someone that looks like he is in his mid-50s to mid to late 50s.
Yeah, Hamoud, that's what our gender does.
Yeah, because I'm like, what are you doing? First of all, and now at this point I'm looking at her going, do you have a side hustle I don't know about? Because, now...
Because that is the pickup line that uncles at the 50s start using.
Look, if your pickup line is, are you not the one from last night? Perhaps you should be at home.
Yes, because the uncle doesn't have anything else to say.
Are you not the one from last night? I was like, eh?
Yes, Helmut. That's what
the
uncle's
doing. Growing up is something else. So that will be me in my 60s. Are you not the one from last night? Man, that guy. Now, and just like the one from where, and you know, homeboy drove off.
Yeah, because that it didn't stick. The question didn't stick because it flew overhead, and he was like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah, I was like, "Wrong person, abort mission, abort."
Yeah.
Now, look, the thing is, on this whole SADC and IMF meeting in Washington, for me, it boils down to one thing. And I think this is where Namibia's motto in terms of foreign policy now comes in, a friend to all and enemy to none.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, these two powers, powers that we have diplomatic and trade relations with both. And this is China and the US. They will always be, obviously, be at odds with each other. And you can see this with, if you go back to the time of the Soviet Union.
Mm.
The US and the Soviet Union were always at each other's necks because, it's a power struggle. It's a power struggle. They will always be involved in a power struggle. Now, for a lot of countries that are sort of like just want diplomatic relations, trade relations with both countries, they will now, there are times where they will have to be, to face a tough decision of who to prioritize. Yeah. That's where we should really up our negotiation or diplomatic skills.
But here's the thing, Hamoud.
My biggest problem, Dwight, is we have guys that are saying, what project? That's on a local level. And I'm like, so...
Okay.
That guy wants to be in parliament, right?
Did you hear about the guys that are worse than that in Namibia?
There are guys that are worse?
Look, at least the political counselor, the political leader at a local authority level told a fellow government official, what project? Have you heard about the communal farmers who a gentleman from the Far East will show up with a bag of money and say, how much is your whole herd of cattle? And then you give the guy a price for a whole herd of cattle.
Mm.
And then the guy comes back with a bag of money and says, just keep them together. Just keep them alive. Just keep them, give them water. Give them feed. Don't do anything. Here's your bag of money. Have you heard of those stories?
Mm-mm.
So, that's currently what's happening. And this is apparently happening in the communal farmers, between the communal farmers, which is also some of the dodgy things.
Here's your money, but I'm leaving the cattle with you.
Yeah, just manage them. Just Just keep them
alive. So you...
until they get picked up.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you instantly switch from the owner to...
No, you became the manager of what was your cattle. You are now
at least for a brief period. I mean, you already have made money out of it.
So you are like South Africa was supposed to be of Namibia. You are just a mandate holder.
You
cannot slaughter. You cannot sell from what you already sold.
Someone is gonna sell.
You just have to manage the resource until delivery takes place.
Yeah.
So the concern here is we already have that happening in Namibia, and that's on a micro level. So the managers of Namibia, which are our officials, they are smelling with the other managers that represent the other countries, these powers, China and the US.
Uh-huh.
You know, they go meet them at banquets and at state-level functions. But on the ground, a different language is happening.
Look, as long as that different language is in line with Namibia's interest.
No, it's not, Helmut.
If it's in line with SIM cards with two iPhones, then I care a lot.
You know how I found out that there's potential for iron mine outside Opuo?
No.
If the guy that met President Bumba, what's his name? What's the guy's name from the Green Hydrogen program?
James Mugabe?
James, yeah. If James didn't bring... What's that guy, the German envoy to the president of, to President Bumba, to meet President Bumba,
yeah,
when we, the media, went to come observe that? We would never have found out that there is potential for iron, another iron mine, iron ore mine outside of Opuo, in Opuo rural.
That's because we don't explore.
And then when I went and Googled iron ore outside Opuo, Namibia, I found out who the company is. We don't know about that. And then did you know that potentially Namibia's largest copper deposit is right outside, literally between Karasburg and the Orange River? But it's an old copper mine. It's 100 years old.
So we know about it?
We don't know about it.
We don't know about the 100-year-old mine?
You and I, we don't know about it. But it potentially shows up at Ministry of Mines and Energy's paperwork as a different... But it has an old number name there in the south. Just for me to go Google the mine, the guys are looking for investors.
Ah, that's a good thing.
But sorry, David. David is here, you know, showing us the clock, the imaginary clock.
Yeah, 5 minutes into the hour of six,
yeah,
and it's Friday, so...
It's not the nexus for paydays and Fridays.
You know what's the mean thing about this month?
What?
Payday for my homies is Monday.
Well, at least they'll be responsible, Helmut. You won't be capitalizing. Maybe not. We don't know, Helmut. If you do, I want trickle-down economics to flourish here on the home run.
All right. Until Sunday, 11 to 1, when I'm playing DJ and comedian.
And Sunday, for me, 5 to 7, when I'm being serious with you while you're sleeping.
Yeah.
Let's see each other.